Well, the conference is now being recorded, so I want to thank everyone who's on the call now and also everyone who's going to be listening to the call at a later date. We're in week number 7 of the Slim Down, which is pretty amazing, which means that there's a lot of time has gone by very, very quickly, which also means that people are hopefully getting a great deal of success with the program. And even for the people who are participating in the Slim Down and are doing, other than what's detailed on the website, hopefully they're getting a lot of results. But I'm hearing a lot of buzz. As a matter of fact, I saw a picture not too long ago of someone who's made an amazing transformation already, even though he's got 30 days left. So I'm really, really excited about all the Apple pictures that we're going to be getting, because I think they're going to really start astounding people this year, just like we did last year. And
right.
At this stage of the game, it becomes a major, major challenge for some people, simply due to the fact that we hear over and over again that people have trouble with motivation. You know, we hear that word all the time. It's like a big catchphrase when you ask someone, how come I can't continue? Well, why is it that you can't continue in the plan that you started or your New Year's resolution or whatever it may be? You always hear that word, motivation. But we do know that there's a mindset that's associated with motivation, and a lot of it has to do with people being able to go through the passage of change. And what is tried and true change about, and that there is a process that you have to go through in order for you to get everything that you need to get, so that you have the tools and the skills in order to really, really make a change that's not just going to be short term. So we have a lady on the line who actually I met, it was over a year ago. I was saying.
Is this Jeanette?
Yes.
You're referring to me? I'm on speakerphone. Can you hear me, or is this a good connection?
I hear you fine.
Okay.
And do you go by the last name D'Amato? You said Baldassano, but do you go by D'Amato? I have you done for D'Amato.
Yeah, I know, but professionally I go by Baldassano.
Okay, so we definitely want to utilize that.
It really doesn't matter, but it's just generally it's Baldassano.
Well, we want to take you through using your professional name, all
okay.
Right, Dr. Jeanette Baldassano. So I want to thank you for being our guest this evening. And tell us a little bit about your background so that we understand exactly who you are and what you do.
Let's see. I'm a licensed psychologist. I've worked in the field probably my whole adult life, fortunately, I guess. And I have a private practice. And, motivation is an issue that I am faced with frequently with people that come and seek my help. So, and even in my own personal life, motivation is something that it's something you always have to keep your finger on, I guess. You can never really take it for granted. So,
when you work with clients in your professional work, where do you see... How would you define motivation?
I guess simply, in the simplest terms, I would define it as will. It's just something that keeps you driven. That's on a very simple, level, and I kind of like to keep things simple. But I think that everybody's much more familiar with the feeling of not being motivated than of the feeling of feeling motivated. You know, it's kind of, I guess we're more in tune to feeling like that when we lack motivation as opposed to when we have it. The absence of it seems to be more, disturbing,
Gotcha.
But it affects, I think it affects us in every breath we take and every, really all the choices that we make in our lives.
Gotcha. So in your work, how do you see it show up for people? Like, how do you see the essence of or the differential from someone who is quote unquote motivated and someone who isn't?
I think people who are motivated have a more realistic view of what they're able to accomplish and what's accomplishable, what's a realistic, you know, expectation. And, you know, I think that when we don't have a realistic expectation, we tend to lose motivation because it never really gets, you know, we never really feel like we've accomplished what it is that we wanted to accomplish. So I think that, you know, the people that I've experienced that seem to be the best at it set goals for themselves that they know based on who they are and their life circumstances are relevant, doable, you know, achievable. So that really keeps motivation going because I think that, you know, motivation really, you know, it's very easy to lose motivation when you're feeling not very successful, you know, when you're feeling like you failed.
So when you say realistic, you know, explain realistic to me. I find this whole topic fascinating. I mean, I've really personally really been studying motivation since I'm 14 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And I read a book by Zig Ziglar that my friend's mother gave me called See You at the Top.
Mm-hmm.
And ever since then, I mean, I've dozens, maybe hundreds of motivational books and listened to definitely thousands and thousands of hours of motivational material from some of the people who've been, you know, made the topic famous, from Earl Nightingale to Tony Robbins, Celeste Brown, Jim Rohn, Dennis Whaley, the list goes on and on and on and on. And so I find it very interesting because I probably take a very different stand on this than most people do.
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting to me to get into the head of someone who doesn't see something as possible, because when you say realistic, it's very different for different people, right?
Absolutely. It's based on, like I said, who we are and what our strengths all, you know, what our strengths are and what our liabilities are and what's, you know, what's reachable. And, you know, I mean, for example, you know, someone who wants to lose an inordinate amount of weight in a very short period of time, just for one example, that's, you know, that may not be the healthiest and the most realistic accomplishment.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of gets set up for failure when you shoot, you know, you shoot for something that is, I guess, not well thought out. And maybe that's the best way to put it. And, you know, when you fail, it really has an impact on how motivated you feel, because I think motivation really feeds on success.
Right.
So that's probably, and you asked me what realistic is, and you know, that really does depend on, I mean, they're kind of universal, you know, realities, but I think that it really does, it's something that someone has to reach themselves. And really define, and you don't always have to know exactly what it is. I mean, you can start by experimenting.
Right.
That's the best way to get to know what your reality is. You know, you can start with small steps.
Good.
But whether it's going for a certain job or a certain, you know, some other type of accolade or some other, you know, it really doesn't matter what it is you're reaching for. But I think you have to really be groomed, in a sense, to be prepared to fight the fight, you know, and walk the walk.
So when you say groom, give me an example.
Well, first of all, you have to do your homework. You know, you have to be prepared, and you have to know what it is that you're looking for and, you know, how then you can develop a plan to achieve it. I mean, that's kind of homework, what I would define as homework. Information gathering.
Gotcha.
The most, you know, the easiest plans to go by the wayside are the ones that are kind of impulsively, you know, the attractive ones that are, you know, impulsively sought after. But, you know, you really do need to be prepared if you're serious about accomplishing it.
Well, you know, that's one of the major reasons why when we thought out the Slim Down plan, that there was a lot of thought that went into giving people steps, because I'm a major believer in that nothing succeeds like success, nothing proceeds like a process, nothing exceeds like excess.
Mm-hmm.
And so really being able to say, to people, here's step one, here's step two, here's step three. Because one of the things that we're doing this year, like what we did last year, is that the plan is laid out only a week at a time. So even
right.
though week 10 is already in existence, I don't want you to see week 10 at week 7. So week 7,
right.
I only want you to have access to week 1 and week 7, because if the module becomes too accessible, I think it's too easy for people to become overwhelmed because they haven't even gotten to, like, week 3 yet, and they're thinking about, man, what am I going to do when I get to week 8? It looks really, really tough, but by the time they would have gotten to week 8, they would have already been groomed enough so that they'd be able to handle it because
right.
they're going through the process.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. So why do you think it is that people have – well, let me give you an example. Now that we're doing this, the Sunday walks and getting opportunity to, you know, the last couple of weeks to speak to more and more people, and I'm kind of living in my own altered reality. So I find it very interesting to hear about from people who they have very limited self-perception
mm-hmm.
and how that limited self-perception starts to play itself in terms of their own possibilities. Where does that come from?
You mean playing down or not being I'm not quite sure if I understand the question. Playing down what your own abilities are or what your own capabilities are or not really?
Well, initially starting from their limited self-perception.
Limited self-perception.
Right.
Well, I mean, where does it come from?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that could really come from almost anywhere. I mean, it obviously can come from the environment. But then you have situations where you have two people who are raised in the same environment and they have very different self-perceptions. So, you know, I always like to think of it as a combination between the way in which, you know, who we are and how we interact with our environment. Do you find, you know, do you find the environment to be nurturing, or is there something in the environment that you find is inspiring or rewarding or you know, gives you a sense of confidence? That's really, I think, how that self-concept develops and self-esteem mm-hmm. in a sense. But then, you know, it does get to a point where I think, you know, self-esteem, I think of it as like, you know, like a bank account. And, you know, in order to have a big, fat self-esteem, like a big, fat bank account, you kind of have to make, you know, consistent and periodic deposits.
Right.
You know, so you really have to contribute to your own self-esteem. It's not something that you can be, compliments don't really build self-esteem. Accomplishments build self-esteem. And
so not compliments, but accomplishments.
Yeah.
I like that.
I mean, someone can tell you, you know, can compliment you about anything, and if you don't actually believe it, it's really just falls on deaf ears. And I know that I've experienced that with people that I know and clients. So, you know, it is something, but you really have to, you know, you have to take a risk and you have to see if you can, if you can say that you've taken it. I don't even think you have to succeed. I think you just have to be able to take a risk and know that you've taken that chance in order for that to be a deposit in your self-esteem account.
Well, you know, it's interesting to say that because I was at the gym the other day and I ran into a friend. We used to commute back and forth together on the ferry for years.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is like a long, long time ago. And we both consistently had the conversation about, well, you know, eventually I'm going to leave my job and I'm going to, you know, go ahead and work for myself, which obviously I went on it and did. And at one point in time, he didn't leave his job, but he opened up a restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
And the restaurant, it was going really well, except, you know, there's too many partners and the restaurant business is tough. But, you know, we gave him a lot of patronage and we were really sad when he finally closed the doors. So when I saw him, he said, like, I'm seeing the paper, everything seems to be going well for you. I'm like, yeah, you know, it's going okay, working hard. I said, what's the next step for you? He goes, well, I'm looking about the possibility of opening another business.
Mm-hmm.
I said, hey, that's pretty bad. Well, that's cool. I mean, I remember all the conversations we had. And he goes, the restaurant was so good for me because it took away the fear
mm-hmm.
that
yeah.
he faced it.
Yeah, that's a great story. It's almost like celebrating your mistakes, because you know, unless you can acknowledge and celebrate your mistakes, you really don't learn anything new. You know, it's almost like celebrating your mistakes or acknowledging, you know, that the fear isn't interfering, you know, in the way in which you might have thought it would. You then can really think clearly and move ahead.
Well, what I'm always fascinated with is that you have someone just like him.
Yeah.
To start a restaurant or any kind of endeavor, and they can very easily, their outcome can very easily be interpreted as failure.
Right.
Why is it that some people come back and some people don't?
That's an excellent question. That's an excellent question, and I don't know that there's a simple answer. I think that it depends on a lot of things. I think, you know, it depends on a person's resilience. I think it depends on a person's, you know, self-esteem, self-confidence. Can they withstand, you know, that whatever the discomfort is that goes along with feeling like they've failed? Can they withstand that and not allow it to, you know, kind of derail them from doing anything else? I don't know. That's a good question. But, you know, you do find that that people either can do that or they can't. So you find that people who can do it may do it more than a couple of times.
Mm-hmm.
But the people that can't just can't. You know, I always think that if you could just get through the first hurdle of kind of, you know, coming, resurfacing, you could probably do it again and again.
Right.
But I think it may be fear, you know, and it just may be, like I said, resiliency that isn't the same. But I think they all kind of work together.
Right.
And I think that fear does kind of have an impact on how resilient you see yourself.
Yeah, but see, the question still comes for me is like, you know, where does that resiliency come from? Where does it come from? You know, I really believe that. One point in time, I had a conversation with my best friend. One night we're talking, and I say to him, I believe that everybody wants to do something great in their life. And he goes, you're wrong. You're wrong. Not everybody wants to do something great in their life. And I sat there and I thought about it. I said, well, why would you say that? I mean, I think that everyone has that. He goes, dude, there's just some people who just want to get by and get out. And I had to sit by and observe after a while. And you know what? I'm kind of in agreement with him now that there are some people, you know, for whatever reason it is. I mean, because part of me believes, and maybe that's, you know, that's a belief that I came into the world with. Or that, you know, there was a spark and that was something that was nurtured by some of the, you know, the conditioning and some of the education that I put myself through.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe team sports. I mean,
mm-hmm.
it could be a series of things. But, and again, I'm consistently and continually, you know, fascinated by saying, by if someone has the intention of being successful in something, is there a process that they can follow that will lead them ultimately towards their goal?
Yeah.
And that it's generic. That there's, I mean, for instance,
right.
I was asking someone, I said, you know, one of the, we came with one of the key successes, you know, is deciding what you want, number one, deciding what you want, finding a tested and proven process that works,
uh-huh.
working it, and then working it long enough for you to get your outcome.
Right. Yeah. I think part of that is, and I don't know if this is actually what you're referring to, but you said something great, and I think that, you know, people evolve, and, you know, with that evolution comes different definitions of what's great. What you think might be, you know, great at 20 might not be the same as at 30, 40, 50, et cetera. So, and all valid, equally valid. But, you know, I hear what you're saying, and you're saying, well, you know, is there some protocol that, you know, once someone has decided that they have a goal, is there some protocol that works across the board regardless of what that goal is?
Right. Exactly.
Right? That's what you're saying.
Exactly. Is there a process? I've heard many things and read many things, and I've kind of, for everything that I teach and do and actually live my life by, and hopefully distilling it to my son, is that you gotta know what you want.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's very, very difficult to get that because. I think it was Wayne Dyer who, in one of his books, who said, "How to get what you really, 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 really want, and not like what would be nice, because it's not compelling enough for most people." But then what I found too is that, you know, and I'm interested in hearing from you know, obviously you're more involved and more qualified background that. Is it really difficult for people to honestly tell you what they really, really, really want? Or is it what they're just willing to settle for?
Well, I think it's more difficult for people to know what for themselves what they truly want. That's the process very often of therapy is helping someone to decide what it is they really want for themselves. Because more often than not, you know, you get on the life train and, you know, you sit in your seat and you just continue along some journey that maybe you didn't have a whole lot of say in at some point. Mm. So I think that becomes really a mission is to really decide what is it that makes me happy?
Mm-hmm.
You know, is it being one of the masses, or is it, you know what I'm saying? Is it doing what, and I don't say that with sarcasm by any means, but is it doing, you know, the norm, so to speak, or do I dare imagine something else for myself?
Right.
Just to be honest with you, really, you know, there's no value judgment on what people choose. You know, it's whatever. The beauty is that you just choose what you're all about. It doesn't matter what it is, whether it's like everyone else or unlike everyone else. You know, it's just your choice.
Right.
So, and I think people have to be free to make that choice. And sometimes they're not at first. Sometimes, you know, there are rules that they've carried or perceptions. And self-imposed, you know, these self-imposed restrictions that they place on themselves about where they should be. And so, you know, that is a process to decide what it is you want. And I think that you need that before you can figure out how to get it.
Well, I find it interesting because my brother, he and his wife are having another child, and he's saying, like, I'm like a little stressed out right now because, you know, we have the three-bedroom home. And then he said the third bedroom was his office. So now, you know, he's got to move the office downstairs to the basement. And he's got to get it ready. His little one's 8 years old. And he's like, and I got this stress at work now. And so immediately I say, you know what? I'm so glad that I don't have that whole thing with, you know, the supervisors and unions and all the rest of the stuff. And he goes, you know what? You know, that's really cool that you don't have that stress. And then I caught myself. I said, you know, hold on. Not that I don't have any stress. It's just
right.
An imagination. It's just I just don't have that. And,
exactly.
You know, it occurred to me as well, then it's just that it's a – that obviously it suits us differently, you know, because he said I've contemplated starting, you know, my business too. And I immediately respond to him that it's not for everybody.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that you have to be, you know, comfortable in, you know, in what it is that you're doing, and what is it that works for you.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes you don't know that though until you rule things out. You know, I actually think you get it's more valuable to learn or to eliminate things that you know are not right for you than it is to actually find the prize, you know, because I think when you find something or one thing, I don't want to say you didn't learn anything about yourself, but I think, you know, by eliminating things that you know are not for you, I think there's more growth potential in that than just to find, you know, what you like kind of thing, you know. I feel like it restricts people more. Yeah. And, you know, I encourage people, listen, try it. If, you know, if it's not what you thought, you've learned something that you would never have learned.
Right.
So, you know, whatever it is, within some parameters, but you do learn a lot about who you are when you know what you don't like.
Right.
When you know what's not for you. But immediately I think people associate that with, oh, no, look at this. This isn't for me either. Now what?
Right.
So they look at it in more of a negative perception more of a positive thing of learning more about yourself.
Well, let me give you an example when it comes to that type of thing. So you have someone who is intelligent. I want to relate this to obviously the topic of most of the people here who are listening to this is about fitness and health and taking charge of their lives. So I'm going to relate it to that. Now, you have a gentleman or a woman or a lady, smart, socially strong, successful, professional.
Professionally,
Yeah. They have good relationships. This is someone who's accomplished certain things, right? But can't get the health and wellness thing together. Right? Do you believe that the things or the skills that they brought to bear to be successful in other aspects of their life, do you believe that those things are transferable?
Absolutely.
What you like?
Did I answer that too quickly?
Well, if you answered it as quickly as you did, I it's because obviously because you believe it.
I believe it, absolutely.
So what would you, if someone had that, if you had that person who was going to be, you're going to be working with, say, look, you know what, my kids are fine, my relationship is good, professionally I'm fine. You know, so much of my life is good, but I just can't seem to lose this pounds, or I just can't seem to find my way to do the things that I know are going to help me look and feel better.
Right.
Have you ever dealt with anyone like that before?
All the time. Very often.
Okay.
And even if it's not as clean cut as that, even if it's someone who, you know, is very successful, has a lot of strengths, basically has their stuff together, but still can't seem to integrate and incorporate taking care of their bodies in a way in which they should be, based on all that we know now. And, you know, I feel like sometimes it really is about the resistance that people have to allowing their intellect or their minds to take care of their bodies. Because I think that, you know, they suspend their minds in that when it comes to their physical, you know, it's like, they can make, you know, incredibly good decisions in all of the parts of their life, but yet when it comes to, you know, self-care like this, they just suspend that ability. And you do see it more often than you think. And I don't know that there's one answer as to really explain it, but I do know that it involves, in order to correct it, it kind of involves just awareness on one level and really retraining someone to think to treat themselves as they would treat all the other facets of their life that they are, you know, paying good attention to and handling properly. You know what I mean? You know. So, you know, I see that all the time.
Right.
And I don't even, I can't even say that I necessarily see that in my practice, but you can see that even, you know, across the board in people, that there are, that, you know, that this, it's kind of a common phenomena.
Right.
And I don't, you know, back, going all the way back to motivation, and I don't know what, you know, what part of motivation, you know, of the motivation process fits that, you know, remedies that particular, because they're not they don't lack motivation with other parts of their life, but
what?
You know, when it comes down to themselves, they somehow they're resistant to, or they just lack the motivation to really, you know, finish, you know, close the circle. I guess that's the way, it's kind of a way to conceptualize it.
Well, I'm an armchair theoretician at this stuff. What's that?
You're a what?
I'm an armchair theoretician. At best at this. I mean, obviously I've read a lot and studied a lot, but I do find it fascinating because I've heard it, and even recently done some like sort of ad hoc coaching with people during the walk, and I've developed into a better than decent listener.
Mm-hmm.
And so I always listen for the cues of,
mm-hmm,
where people are shutting down their possibilities.
Mm-hmm.
Because it shows up in many cases so naturally. Like, I'll give you an example. I don't necessarily give you a true life example. I'll give you a true life example because this person will be anonymous anyway. While I was talking to her, she goes, "I'm just trying to figure out why do I even want to, you know, go through this whole process, because it's happening slowly and I'm feeling better, but you know, when I lose this weight, I'm just going to gain it all back anyway."
Right. Yeah. Well, I mean, that may be history talking. You know, that could be, you know, the only experience that person knows, you know, the only association. I mean, there could be a lot of reasons for that kind of explanation. So, you know, like, just, you know, make a disbelief until you actually have proof to believe, kind of.
Right.
That life can be different.
Right.
You know, I think when it comes down to our relationships with ourselves, it's almost a harder nut to crack than it is, you know, to understand our relationships with all other parts of our lives. So, you know, other people, our professions, or, you know, socially. And I, you know, it's the easiest, I think, to let slide. Because, you know, you can make a deal with yourself. You know, and you can't always make a deal with another, you know, entity as easily as you can. And it may be an unspoken deal, and it may not be a healthy deal, but, you know, I think we make these little deals with these, we kind of, you know, make these little quick deals with ourselves about what to expect and you know, how things are going to go. We do it all the time based on what we know, based on what we think, based on, you know, how, you know, whether we're optimists, whether we're realists, whether we're pessimists, you know, it's based on a lot of things. But it's just, I think it's the first, you know, it's, you could understand why people can kind of fall into that pattern and really have a hard time moving away from it.
Well, give me an example of a little deal.
A little deal is just what you said. You know, I'm going to gain the weight back anyway. I mean, you know, what's the big deal? Or, you know, this is just something that, you know, I just got to lose weight for event A, B, or C, and, you know, and then, you know, you know, I don't really have to pay that much, you know, and if it may not even be spoken, but I don't really have to do this forever. You know, this is just something I just got to get to a certain place, and then, you know, things will be fine.
Gotcha.
Like magical thinking, you know, that it's not something that you can internalize. You know, you could just something like a fix. It's a fix as opposed to, you know, internalizing and incorporating it into your everyday life.
Got it.
So that to me would be like a deal.
I find the whole process, I'm telling you, I find it so fascinating. For example, in our kickoff, last year's winner, Terry Toner, had an opportunity to speak to the audience. And he goes, you know, people ask, this guy lost like 60 pounds in the 10 weeks and was sitting on the couch and decided he was going to get up. He even ran the Spartan race with us. Yeah, and how old is Terry? Terry's, I think, 52, and he's like 53, something of that nature. Had an unbelievable before and after picture.
Uh-huh.
And so he's been struggling with this for quite some time. And so he's speaking to the audience and he said, you know, people ask me constantly, why did this make the difference? Why this time? Why I've had so many starts and stops until now? And he said, I have to tell you this. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Honest.
He said, and, you know, I was waiting for this, you know, this big, profound answer.
Mm-hmm.
And I never got it because, you know, I am thoroughly fascinated and continue to be fascinated with this topic.
And you know what? And I think that's like testimony to the fact that, you know what? You know, sometimes you don't know. But and I don't know what's more crucial, knowing or being able to get back on the horse. So sometimes you don't need to know. Sometimes you just have a bad string, or, you know, there are things that you feel are beyond your control, or, you know, I think we can spend a lot of time trying to understand why, which is, you know, there's not merit to it, but sometimes it can really delay getting back on the horse, and that's more important sometimes than, you know, trying to figure out what it is that went wrong.
Right.
Because you can always, you know, that's something you can always explore. But I think the longer, you know, it takes to feel good about, you know, feel like you're back on track, the harder it is to, you know, to forgive yourself.
Right.
People are very hard on themselves. People generally are much harder on themselves than they think.
Mm.
Much, much harder on themselves. They'll forgive a neighbor, a friend, a loved one, and they will not be able to forgive themselves.
Well, I find it fascinating in my industry where it says this 97% of the people who decide to start a health and wellness plan fail.
Mm-hmm.
That's the statistical average. But what I find interesting about that is that this is the only industry, and it's a multi-billion-dollar industry. As a matter of fact, I believe the health and wellness is going to be a trillion-dollar industry, the next trillion-dollar industry. But yet people fail at alarming rates, yet they blame themselves. They say, well, I was on the grapefruit diet, and I lost a certain amount there. Then I went on the Atkins diet. Then I went on the carb cravers diet. And it's like diet, 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 diet after diet. And they're losing
this
weight.
And they still don't look like the picture.
Right, because no one looks like the picture.
Right, but I think that's why I said that. I think that's part of the reason why there's such a high failure percentage is because, you know, people try very hard and they still don't look like the picture, which is the whole gimmick in the first place, You know, the industry is really that's part of the industry. So I think that, you know, you kind of need, we need a new icon, you know, we need a new final stage, you know, image for people to think about, and as opposed to just, you know, what we know, which is the pictures on the box and the you know, the TV and the magazines and, you know, all of this stuff. But even if you tell people that's really, you know, not realistic, that's all they see. You know, that's basically
I adopted a philosophy which says that when people are looking to see, like, getting in shape and losing weight is always going to be the parameter by which most people who are involved with exercise program will judge their results.
Right.
And, but I request for my clients to not get on the scale.
I'm coming back.
And to become task-oriented.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I said before. Is that
what kind of oriented?
Task-oriented.
Task-oriented, okay.
So you want them to find a process, a tested and proven process, that works, and then work it until you get the results, once you find out the results. And that getting on the scale is because, again, it's almost like you're going to school to get your college degree, and then, you know, like every second week you're checking to see how many credits you have.
Right.
your time would probably be best served by studying.
Right.
You know, and maybe some people need that barometer, but I just think that it's a distraction. And that most people, like I said, would be best served by getting in there and doing the work and getting a full spectrum of monitoring of where they're going, rather than just being reliant on that one thing that I find to be so discouraging. Because,
mm-hmm.
again, it's one day you're up a pound, one day you're down a pound, and, you know, all that matters is that in the end, what is the net result? But it's
mm-hmm.
very difficult to get people to look at it like that.
I know. I agree with you, and you're absolutely right. I think that you know, asking someone how they're doing, a much more valuable response would be, "I feel great," as opposed to, "I lost 10 pounds."
Yes.
Because I think that you forget, you know, feeling great. You know, if it's something that you've neglected your health, you forgot what feeling great feels like.
Yeah.
You know, you forgot what having energy feels like.
Right.
So that's really the reinforcer, you know. But I don't know if you can totally eliminate the scale, because I think that's, you know, that's the barometer that we've established. But I do think that it shouldn't certainly be the only one. I think that you know, really experiencing a better quality of your body, you know, is a tremendous reward.
Well, you know, and I don't necessarily want to eliminate the scale, because the scale is, I'll give you an example again. I have someone who comes in for a consultation, and they want to lose X amount of weight, whatever reason. So we go through this whole process of figuring out what it is that they really, really want. In the beginning, they say that they want to lose weight. Ultimately, they want to feel good about themselves, and I understand that.
Mm-hmm.
It took a while to kind of figure that out, but their belief is that losing the weight is going to make them feel better about themselves.
Right.
And they're probably right, but it's a, you know, it's a conduit to the end result, which is fine.
Mm-hmm.
So we want to do an evaluation of where they are. So they get on the scale, we do a body fat test, and the person walks in with the same body that they did 10 minutes before we got on the scale.
Mm-hmm.
They get on the scale, and they have this affinity with this number that, for that moment, or maybe other moments in their life, defines them.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point in time, the definition is never one that's encouraging. It's and when you add the body fat test in there, it also becomes, you know, a new level of defining themselves, because they're so addicted to that being, once
right.
again, the barometer of
right.
their esteem.
Well, those are the mile markers, like it or not. I mean, unfortunately, those are the mile markers that we know best, and that is scale. I mean, that is pounds. But it's very one-dimensional, and but sometimes people just do have a hard time seeing beyond that. It's just, you know, I don't know. I'm not quite sure if there's a complete way around it, but I do think that it's like we said, you talked about earlier about what's a reality, and I think that's it's a reality. I think what people can be trained to do and educated to know is that, you know, it's not the measure of all measures.
Right.
And that sometimes is just takes, you know, information and
right.
training and rehearsal and all that stuff. That it's not all, it's not as important and all as important as maybe it once was. Because at one point that was all it was.
That was.
What was all we had?
Yeah, that was. And it's been my...
That and blood pressure, I mean... I don't know. Yeah, it was pretty simple at one time.
Right. But I tell you, that has been my commitment over the course of the vast majority of my career doing this, is to try to get the people that I come in contact to look at this whole thing comprehensively and to,
uh-huh.
and to get an understanding of the technology, the processes, and the abilities that they bring to the table that will enable them to accomplish things long term. But
mm-hmm.
it's got to be treated, like you said, that it was with an education, intervention, coaching.
Yep.
And then, again, this is me, you know, screwing my own philosophy. It's got to be treated like hygiene, you know. It's
mm-hmm.
it's like it's got to be like a daily routine where people are, you know, enabling themselves to reinforce this day in and day out. Rick Pitino, in his book called Success is a Choice, says that you have to make your New Year's resolution 365 times a year.
Right.
But
yeah.
most of the time, and again, what you said was really, really true, that many people, the public at large, is so subjected to the conditioning that is conducive to the institutions that have the most to gain by people functioning at this way. There was a study that was rendered where they had some kind of test. It must have been like some type of questionnaire, and it was given to women.
Mm-hmm.
And it was an indicator of how they felt about themselves. And then they put beauty and health and fitness magazines in front of them, and they took a follow-up test.
Mm-hmm.
And the test showed that as a result of reading the magazines, that these women didn't feel nearly as good about themselves after looking
as
at
it. As they did before, yeah. I'm not surprised. Yeah.
But what
yeah.
a great way to sell products.
Yeah.
Right?
Absolutely. What are the reason are they around?
Yeah.
That's
exactly.
their only reason why they, that's the only reason why they exist.
Right. Right, exactly. What a great way to sell products, because you have a subject who you want them to feel dependent upon your product to be to seem accepted by
right.
their peers.
Right.
And yet you want them to identify with the airbrushed pictures that
right.
and the airbrushed images that are in that periodical television show, whatever it may be.
Absolutely.
And, right. And then you want to associate your products with the images that they're aspiring to be.
Mm-hmm.
And the more impossible you make it for them, the more that you can assure that they'll keep coming back for more.
Right. Yeah. And that, I mean, it's not just, I mean, magazines and, you know, literature that nature, it's not just products of that nature. They sell everything, you know, in the same way, whether it's fashion or whether it's, you know, life insurance or cars or, I mean, that's what the whole concept, I think, of, magazine advertising is about. So,
mm-hmm.
I mean, it's, you need it all. By the time you finish reading the book, reading the magazine. But, you know, I encourage people, that have really struggled with this to kind of, I think what has to happen is people have to kind of revise their ideal. Because sometimes, you know, the ideal that they have is not realistic. and it's not doable. I mean, not for anyone, not necessarily, you know, for not because anyone has any faults, but, you know, what is the ideal, you know, whether it's an emotional ideal or physical or a combination or, and I think when the, you know, when your ideal can be something that you can actually think about and plan out and strategize and understand that it's within your, you know, reach, you can then, you know, figure out how then to measure yourself against it. Because mm-hmm. the ideals that we have to measure ourselves against are often not realistic. So you're always going to fall short. So, you know, it's and I think that falling short is, you know, getting back to how we all started, falling short is not good for motivation, to sustain motivation when you feel like you're falling short or you have some type of deficiency.
So what would you recommend someone who needs to do that? Like, so in other words, in order for them to go through that process that you just mentioned, what do they have to physically do? How does someone do that?
Which part? Develop a new ideal?
Yes.
Well, first of all, they have to give it thought. I know that may sound silly, but you know, they have to give it thought. They have to actually believe that it's something that they need to think about. And you know, and they have to just, you know, decide that the measures that they're using up until this point they're holding themselves to a standard that is self, you know, kind of self-defeating because they can never measure up. You know, I don't. Part of it also is being able to, you know, forgive oneself and to be flexible. I mean, those are two really, really hallmark, you know, kind of qualities that go along with all of this because, you know, no one's perfect. And unless you really believe that, it's always going to be a mark against you in your new ideal. So, I mean, you can begin by writing down a list of your good qualities and writing down a list of the qualities that you think you could use improvement and taking a good look at them and seeing what they look like. I mean, you can do it on your own. You can do it with, you know, in a group setting with friends if you're comfortable enough. You can go to, you know, go into counseling setting and do it. But it really, it's one way, I think, to kind of begin to develop, you know, the person that you truly want to be.
Gotcha. So what I'm getting from this, because I always want to advocate on behalf of the listener, it sounds to me like you're saying that you need to sit down and be still for a bit.
Yeah, absolutely. With yourself and your own issues.
Right. So if things are going on, and again, this is, I love the fact that this, that this conversation here has a great bearing on not just getting yourself healthy and losing weight, but probably anything in your life. I mean, and it makes you, you know, validated because this has a lot to do with everything that I've done and moved. As you know, I'm getting ready to move into a new location. And so there's a lot of thought and contemplation that went into, you know, having to move that along. And I did exactly what you recommended to do.
Mm-hmm.
I said, okay, I got to take some time here and just be still and allow for myself to think, because it's so easy when you're challenged by something to become distracted.
Absolutely.
By other things. And when someone obviously is not taking care of their health and their wellness and it's affecting their quality of life, they got to be distracted.
Mm-hmm.
Oprah Winfrey said that she, before she started taking on healthy nutrition and looking at that as a potentiality in her lifestyle, she never had a headache because she had always sedated herself with food.
Right.
So all of a sudden she had to deal with some part of her life that she never dealt with before. But becoming still and then thinking about what is your outcome, where are you presently? So you're still. You're thinking about where are you presently, and then actually get a pen out, a piece of paper, And as you said, start writing down good qualities, qualities that you are challenged with. And then from this listing of your self-evaluation, you want to come up with what is it that I'm choosing to be, do, and have?
Mm-hmm. Very well put.
And I'm just utilizing what you said. and then from there, being able to say, okay, here I am. Here's where I want to be. Let's start setting a course of action in order to bridge the gap.
Absolutely. And I think that what people tend to do is they start with the course of action first instead of doing the pre-work.
Uh-huh.
And so it's easy to find that courses of action. They're everywhere.
Right.
You know, but they don't necessarily all fit.
Right.
And you may not even be aware of how it's going to help or, you know, if it's going to work. So it's almost an avoidance of dealing with the real issue by jumping.
Right. That's what I'm getting out of it now.
Yeah.
That's actually the distraction.
Right. And it just keeps, and you know what? The record, it skips at the same spot every time. You can do it, you know, it's just going to go over, you know, you're going to go over the same snag again and again and again.
Right. You know, it's interesting because I talk about that in the coaching part of the Flingdown website. And so when we're meeting people, they're saying, like, I'm really not sure what I should be doing, what I should be eating. And I know Kathy's probably laughing about something when I say it. That I made a post not too long ago that says, stop reinventing the wheel.
Right.
Everything that you need as far as to be successful here in this process is right there for you.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I get that response, and then they say, well, I don't know. I said, well, did you go to the website? Well, I kind of breezed through it. Okay, that means no.
Yeah.
So can you commit to going to the website, getting the information that is right there for you? Here's a classic example. I broke my phone. I dropped my phone the other day and shattered the screen. Someone walked around with this shattered screen, and then someone said to me, you know, there's someone that can fix that for you. And I was on the Internet trying to figure out, well, you can buy the screen, you can do it yourself. And it just came to, I just had that, like, that revelation. It said, wait, just go find someone to fix it.
Right. Yeah.
And sometimes it's just that simple. It's like rather than using the broken phone and say, okay, find out what the course of action is. You know what the outcome is. The outcome is not to walk around with this broken phone.
Right.
Google, stop.
Right.
And find someone that can do that for you, and then you can move on to the next thing.
Right. That sensation of feeling immobilized is, I think, what trips people up all the time. They just kind of get immobilized, like you with the phone, you know, and it's like, you know, you don't know how to proceed. And sometimes it's really simple. You just can't get it.
Right. Rather than lamenting over, why did I drop it? Just go get it fixed.
And I think that's probably a great example of where group support can be really, really helpful. Because someone else will be able to recognize it and perhaps much more quickly than you.
Right.
You know, and vice versa. So this is why we have each other.
Right. That's awesome. Do you want to have any last words before we close? I mean, look, we get started on this topic, we can talk all night. But
that's
want to make sure.
I know. I think we covered it all. I think we covered pretty much all. You know,
I think so.
I think, you know, if I can leave a couple of words, and that is, you know, people have to be a little more forgiving of themselves, because you know, it's, you know, that's the biggest culprit, I think, is when you can't let go of something, you know, forgive yourself and let go of it. That's the biggest, you know, roadblock with progress. So I think you touched on a bunch of really good topics.
Very, very nice. Part of me doesn't want this to end, even though I know that it has to.
Yeah.
Let me know
when let me know if you want to do it again. So.
Yeah, I think we should visit the topic again. I believe that everyone who's listening to it is going to get, and those who listen to it on recording, are going to get a lot of value from this whole thing. So I want to thank you once again for your time.
Great.
Energy. I'm going to put your contact information regarding your services on the website, if you don't mind.
Not at all.
I'll definitely get it from you later, and I'll put
text
it on.
I'll text it to you.
Yeah, please do that. So if anyone wants to utilize your services, that they'll be available.
Great.
For that. All right. So terrific.
All right.
Thanks for being on the call. I appreciate it.
Very good, Tony.
And to all our listeners who are listening live and those who are listening and recording, I want to thank you for your time and your energy. Please make sure that you can listen back to this once you download to your computer as many times as you like. And sometimes you want to listen to things over and over again because the first time you listen to them, you don't necessarily absorb everything. And I think this is a great topic that would be, like I said, bring a lot of value to everyone. So I'm going to end this call and all the calls saying that you continue to work until the miracle happens and always put your heart and soul in your goal. God bless everyone. Good night.
Good night now. Bye-bye.